Today marks the second outing of our newest recurring segment on The Exchange, Culture and Tech Decoded, a guide to navigating the many things that technology makes possible in the culture of today. Your hosts are Precious Yamaguchi and Samuel Campbell from the podcast studio at Catalyst, a co-working space in Ashland. Precious was also one of the founding panelists on our media segment, Signals and Noise. Take it away, Precious and Samuel.
Welcome to Culture and Tech Decoded with myself, Precious Yamaguchi, Associate Professor of Communication at Southern Oregon University, and Samuel Campbell, artist, actor, podcaster, head of podcast production and media at Catalyst Ashland. So what is our show? Our show focuses on technology, but also identity relating to our own personal identities, generation, and so on. Welcome, Samuel.
Thanks, Precious. I'm excited to be here. My name is Samuel Campbell. Like Precious said, I'm an artist and young person, and I'm lucky enough to work at Catalyst Ashland, where I can keep practicing things like podcast creation. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited you're here, and we're going to talk a little bit about electronic music today. There's all different types of subgenres within electronic music, and we're going to explore one of them. But just some subgenres: dubstep, as mentioned, techno,
house music.
I actually love house music. I'm
Me
a little
too.
Partial to that. So we're super excited to have a special guest, which we'll introduce in a little bit. But throughout this pandemic, the way that we've listened to music and engaged in music has changed a lot. I don't know about you, Samuel, but what are some of the things that the pandemic changed about the way that you engaged, whether it's live music or recorded music?
Well, I have to say I didn't see a whole lot of live music over the pandemic. It made it kind of hard. I think my Spotify account got a whole lot of use over the past 2 years. Not an endorsement of Spotify, but streaming has been the avenue I've gone to over the past 2 years. Listen to a lot of music. What about you?
Yeah, so I think that's our question also for the audience today listening. How have you listened to music throughout the years? How has it changed? I didn't get to see a lot of live music throughout the pandemic, which is something I usually love to do and do often. I saw two acts. The first one was in September of 2021. So all of 2020, pretty much almost all of 2021, I didn't see any live music. But the first show that I saw, it was a great way to come back to live music. I was in Seattle for one of the first times I was ever without kids, just there on a short work trip, two nights. And I saw that one of the bands that I love to listen to throughout the pandemic, Chromeo, was playing there.
Kismet.
And they're super fun. They did a lot of pandemic type of related songs. And then I saw that they were playing and I saw they were sold out. And the journalist side of me just was like, I'm going to reach out to them and see if I could go to their show. And I did. I contacted Dave One through Instagram. I told him, hey, your show is sold out. Is there any way I could go?
Using technology to get access.
Right. And he texted me back and he said, yeah, how many people want to go? And I said, just me. He put me on the guest list. I went. I was in VIP. I saw the show. And then they were starting late and I thanked him for getting me in. And he texted me back and he was like, oh, we're running late. We're flying from New York. We're just like touching down. And we had this whole conversation going and I saw the show. And because I am an older person than you, Samuel, I can't
just a little bit.
I can't stay out past one. Because I get tired. So I went home, and then the next morning I thanked him for the show, and we continued on with our conversation. And he's also a professor, just like our guest here today.
Ooh, little segue.
Yeah.
Little segue.
So we talked. He talked about being a French professor at one point. And so the second show I saw was actually our guest today, Diatom, and they are both professors at Southern Oregon University. We have Justin Harmon, Enrique Chacon, and welcome to the show today.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
So I guess we'll start off with our first question that we asked the audience, and it's just an introduction of how has music changed from the time that you first started listening to music to now. How has that type of experience for you changed throughout the years and technology?
Well, I think this is true for Enrique as well. I listen to music primarily on the vinyl format, so I have a fairly large record collection. And it's my pleasure when I come home from a long day of teaching to just kind of put on a record and take the time with the material, with the physical media, and just sit there and kind of immerse myself in it for a while. But I do stream, like when I'm driving and throughout the day in my office at work too. But
yeah, the same for me. Also, I think the pandemic gave us the chance to expand our knowledge in music, to explore much more. And now we have these streaming platforms where you can actually, well, the algorithm kind of presents you with new artists. So I think technology, it's helping me also to expand on my knowledge, like getting to know more artists, because I think the algorithm knows what I like.
Right, yeah.
That helps.
Yeah, and it's interesting and helpful, too, to kind of make connections between genres in a sometimes surprising way, to explore different sounds that maybe you were unfamiliar with before, but are kind of connected to your childhood experiences, too, that come out.
Yeah, speaking of that, how would you describe your music? And a lot of it has to do with sound and noise and also the collaboration between you. Both of you seem very compatible in that way. So I think it's best if you describe your music yourselves.
Yeah, so what do you think, Enrique?
Well, it's interesting what you mentioned, Precious, because it's certainly we're very compatible, but also we play very different type of instruments. As you know, I play woodwinds, right, clarinet, saxophones, right. Whereas Justin plays electric or electronic instruments. So we bring together these two ways of expressing music to create some improvisational sound that, you know, goes from trying to just barely break the silence up until, like, building up and creating these overwhelming sound that can be almost aggressive at times.
Yeah, and we, I would say also our approach is characterized by the fact that, and we take this seriously, it sounds funny, but we don't know what music is. And we're sort of trying to discover that and make sense of it in the act, in the process, rather than presupposing some particular arrangement or even especially some sort of affective or emotional response that we want on the part of the audience that's prescribed. It's more exploratory and in that way, I think, kind of liberatory for us in the making, but also hopefully for the listener.
On the point of compatibility and exploration, can you two think of a time when your compatibility has come together to make this improvisation or exploration a much better experience, a piece of art that you really loved, and then a time when maybe that collaboration clashed a little bit, maybe fell a little bit harder?
Well, I think our music is clash in itself.
Yeah.
We also do not presuppose that we have to agree on everything or that our music has to be extremely
cohesive,
say, compatible, or I don't know, like, you know, it has to match in every aspect. So I think that we bring what we are to when we're playing, so there's going to be obviously some overlapping, and then these moments where what we want to do exactly matches what the other wants to do, and some others were it's far. But I think that is part of the experience. I don't think any of us presupposes that the music, what we do, has to go in a specific direction. And so, since it is open, we feel free to explore and to express ourselves.
Yeah. You're listening to Culture and Tech Decoded on Jefferson Exchange. I'm Precious Yamaguchi with Samuel Campbell. Our guests right now are Diatom, Enrique Harmon, and Justin Harmon and Enrique Chico.
That's fine. Yeah.
And we are going to listen to a little bit of your music, a clip right now.
Great.
Thank you.
And when I saw you both play live, there's so much going on, not just technically, but physically. You guys are sweating, and like there was a lot of excitement I felt. And I'm really excited about your upcoming show in June, June 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Mies Auditorium in the Art Building at the SOU campus, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Justin, can you tell us a little bit about the event that's coming up?
Yeah, so this is actually the final program for this year's campus theme, of which I am the co-chair, along with my colleague in philosophy, Prakash Chinjeri. And the campus theme for this year is disagreement. And so for a couple of years now, Enrique and I have been wanting to do a live film score of a silent film. And we were thinking about this particular picture before we even knew what the theme would be. Because in 2021, it was the 100-year anniversary. But then it just worked out with disagreement because it's considered by many to be the first anti-war picture. And it's also the film that sort of launched Valentino into stardom. It's directed by Rex Ingram, and it's a World War I-based kind of film. And we've been working on the sound to accompany it, largely improvisational. But did you want to say anything about it, Enrique?
Yeah, I think it's also a pretty interesting movie. It has many things. It's very rich for its time. It's based on a novel by Vicente Blasco Ibáñez, which was a very interesting writer, politician, activist from Spain. So this novel is based on a novel by Blasco Ibáñez, and it was a bestseller in 1919 in the United States. Mm. So Blasco Ibáñez was very popular. So it was Rex Ingram's idea to bring this novel that was already known to adapt it to the film. So it has many things that are quite interesting. Also was one of the first movies that represented tango in film, and kind of this image of the Latin lover as well. So it's interesting and problematic and rich. And there is a monkey in the movie.
There's also a monkey that wears clothes and it reads a newspaper.
Yes. So,
what kinds of sounds represent that monkey?
We're trying to figure that out. Probably a clarinet or something like that.
Something mischievous. Yes. For sure. Yeah.
On the more technical end, what does it take to set up one of your guys' concerts?
It takes about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of pieces, a lot of moving parts, a lot of cables that get tangled up. It's sometimes a nightmare.
Yeah, a bit more cables than a typical acoustic event that someone might be used to.
Right,
I would think.
Yeah. Because I use a number of not only synthesizers, but various electronic gadgets, pedals, and so forth. And we also employ contact mics, which we attach to various objects, and we activate the sound in different ways. So at the show at Catalyst, I had my snare drum contact mic'd, and I was using like a 8-foot or a 6-foot chain, which I was sort of dragging along the various surfaces. And that was actually one of the points of fruitful conflict between Enrique and I. We had planned to begin sort of slowly and atmospherically, and I thought I was doing that with the chains. And then at the end of the show, he was like, "What are you doing? Like, you just couldn't wait to bring the chains in."
Yeah, but it was We loved what we did anyway, so we found it meaningful,
right?
So
you're listening to Culture and Tech Decoded on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Precious Yamaguchi with Samuel Campbell. Our guests are Diatome. You can visit us by phone at 800-838-3760. 800-388-3760 if you have any questions for our guests, or you could send in an email. So I'm really interested in your culture and the way that your culture and the fields that you study influence your music.
Well, I try to approach the music really, I teach philosophy. I'm a philosopher, but I try to use my artistic explorations in a really non-academic, non-philosophical way. Of course, I can't help but being informed in my practice by my education and interests and so forth. But it's very immediate and intuitive and immersive when I'm producing sounds in a kind of open-ended way that I try not to overthink. It's almost a non-intellectual thinking in practice that I'm up to.
And I think we approach from a similar way, but sometimes we have very interesting discussions about what we do and what we're trying to do. So it is obviously informed by what we do, what we read. Obviously, we're intellectual, so it's a music that it doesn't seem like, but it's intellectually informed, and it's obviously we're trying to express. So when it comes to what I do, I think it's not directly related to my field of study, because I study literature, and what I do is mostly that or film studies. So it's not directly related. So it's a part of my life that it's more, I don't know, personal, intimate, where I get to express what I am. I don't know what I am, but I get to express it.
Yeah, noise, I mean, there is a kind of psychosocial and political aspect or dimension to it, like exploring marginalized sounds or sources of kind of auditory confusion, ambiguity, or discomfort. And so it's a means, really, too, of interrupting regimes of sensibility in terms of what is supposed to sound good, how you're supposed to react or internalize what's going on.
In doing research for you two, I came across the term anti-jazz. I'm wondering if you could maybe explain that mantra a little bit.
Yeah, that term came from a music critic when he was describing a concert concert in which John Coltrane and Eric Dolphy were playing. So he said that the experience was abhorrent, and that he was very disgusted by this music. They were destroying the music, and
they were constantly destroying the melody.
Yes,
right. So that they were making. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're trying to do, to undermine melodic expectations. Sometimes, as you know, Justin was talking about marginal sounds. I play saxophone and clarinet, that they're very mainstream instruments, but I try to play them in a different way. Sometimes I pretend that I'm playing some melody, but then I don't follow through. So what we're using this term anti-jazz in a playful way, and trying to homage Eric Dolphy and Coltrane, when this type of music, when they were more experimental, more aggressive, more improvisational.
Yeah,
I really see that connection also between the event that you're throwing on June 2nd. Again, I'll mention it, June 2nd, 7 p.m., Mies Auditorium Art Building, SOU campus. And they'll be doing a type of improvisational film score to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And so a lot of times we're used to music being like 3 minutes and, again, having a type of melody and chorus. But this is actually a really long type of film score and a bit of practice that you said, but also improvisation of what you're seeing and also responding to that with what people then hear. What are some things right now that are inspiring you and your music that you're creating?
Well, I think in this case, what we're doing with this live scoring, this is, as you know, we're living in a very violent time. So this is a pacifist movie. So I found this pretty inspiring and interesting. And we want to respond to some extent to the movie and to current events. Also, I think, live scorings and when they were silent movies shown, they were improvised. So we want to also do this. Like live scorings, they were just screening the movie and random musicians probably want to, it depends, they would just play along to whatever they were seeing, try to respond. So that's what we're trying to do, to respond to the movie and to kind of, respond and to respond to the current events with our music.
Yeah, and I'm thinking also we're approaching this project almost as if the film was made 100 years ago in anticipation of our sounds.
Wow.
I was waiting for you.
Yes. So this movie is going to find some sort of completion now.
Ah, thank you. For people that are maybe unfamiliar, whether it's experimental music or electronic music, what do you suggest personally as an entryway of maybe a good introduction or educating themselves, even if it's not music itself, but writing?
A number of influences that we each bring individually to our contribution. We're both very much steeped in the history of jazz, especially kind of avant-garde, experimental, or free jazz. But I've kind of grown up with early industrial music, so stuff like Throbbing Gristle, Cabaret Voltaire, Einstürzen und Neubauten, Bourbonese Quark, and so forth from the late 1970s, Kraftwerk, and then some more kind of academic music like John Cage from earlier, obviously,
like
Paulina Liveros. Paulina Liveros is one of my favorite kind of composers of electronic sounds.
This idea of not presenting a music in terms of melodic sequences, it's present in this tradition, right? John Cage, Luigi Nono, Yannis Xenakis, all of these academic music, highly trained musicians and composers that were trying to dismantle this notion of music. So I find that a very important also aspect of the music history.
Thank you so much. You're listening to Culture and Tech Decoded on Jefferson Exchange. I'm Precious Yamaguchi with Samuel Campbell. Thank you so much to our guests today, Diatom, Justin Harmon, and Enrique Chacon. And please go visit and see their performance June 2nd, Thursday, 7 p.m., Mies Auditorium in the Art Building on the SOU campus, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and they will be doing a live film score to it. Thank you so much, and best wishes to you both.